All right. This is
welcome to episode one of. Did we title it yet?
I D-Gens, but I don't think that's an appropriate name.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We'll think about it.
Work in progress.
Work in progress. You know, that's the title of the podcast. Work in progress.
Actually, okay, I rock with that. Yeah, that sounds catchy. It's definitely taken.
Okay, and we'll be better.
Wait. Work in progress.
Yeah, I found it. Podcast. One, two, three. Sophia Bush. No disrespect, Sophia. We're just gonna roll with the name though.
Waterloo Casts.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have no good ideas. But like,
now we're running with work in progress, Sophia.
All right. And screw you, Sophia.
No. We're being respectful here. That's a damning statement, man.
And.
I don't associate with this guy.
All right.
Okay, yeah. Welcome to the first episode of Work in Progress. A little 30, 40-minute brainchild of... Why are we doing this again?
Fletcher wanted to do a podcast, and I've been egging him on as well.
We need to spread wisdom.
Oh, I got a lot of wisdom to spread.
I find that pretty hard to argue with.
What do you mean?
Yeah, I say we get into our first topic. We've each prepared, you know...
Let's hear everyone's topics first.
Okay, we're gonna go around and do a little sharing circle.
Hylas, what are yours?
I'm gonna talk a little bit about the recent CrowdStrike outage, uh-huh. And I'm hoping that's gonna then transition into just kind of a perspective on just how integral so many fragile systems are, technological systems in our day to day.
All right, Snubby, what's yours?
Just one? All right, then my topic that I'm very passionate about talking about today is Mexicans and their fascination and relation with Goku and Dragon Ball Z.
All right. And mine is, as I mentioned, it's the nuances and the complexities of the concept of privilege.
Mm.
All right. We all good? All right. Hyla, since you seem to be quite passionate about yours, go ahead, take the floor.
I seem passionate, I think. All right. So recently I took a flight to the United States, first big trip over there, which was really cool. I got down to the great state of Georgia, got to check out a whole bunch of, you know, really cool things down there. And then, see, I didn't know this at the time, but I had a flight that left Thursday, is that July 18th, I think it was? Thursday, July 18th, my flight left the U.S. Right in the evening time. I made it back to my home province in Nova Scotia in Canada. Went to bed at like 2 in the morning, and you know, I was just happy, grateful to be home. But when I woke up that Friday, July 19th, I don't doubt many people are going to remember that day for a few years to come, because I was probably one of the last flights to get off the ground before the international CrowdStrike outage. I figure you guys were following that?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it was... I was feeling pretty lucky. Essentially, what I was able to gather from news articles, I'm sure maybe those of you listening probably followed it too, because it was so widespread, a update for a... Essentially, this software that CrowdStrike develops was a dependency of the Windows operating system. It was updated overnight that Friday morning, and this update contained a bug. The nature of that bug I can get into shortly, but that bug caused severe problems for those Windows-based systems, causing them to enter commonly what's referred to as blue screen of death, and then a boot loop, essentially bricking the systems and making them unusable. So all of a sudden, banks can't access transaction histories, hotels can't check people in, flights can't get off the ground. The classic epic fiasco.
Uh-huh.
I think an important impact that we should also note is the fact that hospitals and computers in hospitals severely got affected by this as well.
Yep, you're absolutely right. When I was talking to my girlfriend about it that day. She volunteers in the hospitals, and she was asking me about it because she was saying, like, yeah, all the screens that I had in the hospital, they had the, you know, the frowny face Windows puts up, and the computer ran into a problem, and they'd flash to black as it rebooted, and stayed like that all day, which, like, it was insane. I think I want to talk for a little bit, or at least get your guys' opinion on each of us. We've kind of worked, so each of us are students in the electrical and computer engineering program at the University of Waterloo, so we know a little bit. I did, because I think we want to give our kind of credibility to this topic here, because we've written code, we've bug tested code for projects, various things like that. So I think we know and appreciate the importance of good code review, as well as like good processes and what we'd expect of a large company like CrowdStrike, which is trusted by so many international vendors. What do you guys think it means that a bug like this was able to get out into circulation on a production?
Wait, Terry, before we talk about that, though, how exactly does CrowdStrike, like, do they write code for Microsoft?
Okay.
That's an interesting question. Sujesh, you can take it. I can take it as well. You started talking.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah. Yeah, please correct me if I'm wrong anywhere, but how I understand it is CrowdStrike is a cybersecurity firm that many corporate entities around the world contract to write cybersecurity software for their machines. And so in this specific case with Microsoft computers, what happened is Microsoft has contracted CrowdStrike to right cybersecurity software. So this is software that essentially just looks at network behavior that the computer has and detects anomalies. And what's happened here is CrowdStrike has written very low level kernel level software. So essentially it at the core level of the computer, and Microsoft has added that to their Windows operating system. So whenever CrowdStrike makes an update to its software, what happens is because the code is such an integral part of the Windows operating system, any code that CrowdStrike updates is updated on every Windows machine that uses that corporate level code. And once again, with this example, because CrowdStrike has had a bug, any Windows computer that used this software just completely died.
Yeah, that's like the long and short of it. TLDR, CrowdStrike software is a dependency of the Windows operating system, and it does act at the kernel level in order to monitor network traffic. And this I think was really funny. I did some research. So the actual bug that caused it to crap the bed is, I'm going to say this and you guys are going to laugh about it, it's called a null pointer dereference, which I'm going to try to explain in a second here. So if you're a non-programmer, you can turn off your ears for a little bit. If you're interested in programming, feel free to listen. Pointers are a concept in programming that essentially, as exactly you infer from the name, points to a specific location or object in the computer's memory. And the act of dereferencing a pointer is what a pointer is it's that location in memory. So when you then dereference a null pointer, what you're doing is looking at the actual object. So if I have the number 4 stored at a spot in memory, the spot in memory is the pointer, and by dereferencing that spot in memory, I then see the number 4. However, there's something called a null pointer, which is just a pointer that points to nothing. It's a useful object when you're coding. If you need something to point to nothing, or you need to have something, if you have something that points at something and you're deleting that something, you set its pointer to null pointer to guarantee that you delete it safely. However, dereferencing null pointer makes the computer get really confused, poops the bed. And that's exactly apparently what happened here with this CrowdStrike case, it's crazy to me. I'm still going through my degree, as are you guys. So for such a simple error like that to get through the production branch and testing and stuff like that, what do you guys think that says about CrowdMark as a corporation?
CrowdMark.
my fault. I'm getting wires crossed. CrowdStrike. CloudStrike, whatever.
Fletcher, do you have any?
Yeah, sure. I think the main thing that it highlights is everyone's dependency on Microsoft, really. Just the fact that everyone uses the same system and that simple line of code can just completely brick. Planes couldn't land, planes didn't fly, hospitals, as we mentioned, weren't working properly, and there's so many just... Sorry?
Sorry, yeah, I forget where I got this stat from. I think I think at some point in time it was like 98% of the computers in the world run on Windows.
Yeah.
When you compare to like Mac or even anything like that, it's like, so you're absolutely right. Microsoft is incredibly widespread.
Yeah. And I don't think it being widespread is a problem. It's the fact that these updates happened by themselves and there was nothing that anyone could do. Like, this wasn't an update that people decided to install and said, oh, it didn't work, let's go back. You know, it's something that was forced onto all of these systems. And I think bugs happen and people mess up from time to time, but the fact that it affected so many people with so much influence really opens your eyes to something about that.
Yeah, I completely agree. So Josh?
Talking about the bug itself, like the whole dereferencing and null pointer, as Fletcher said, yeah, bugs happen, and oftentimes we'll find, like, even though it is a simple bug, it's an often incredibly hard to track bug. And I think that's part of the reason why, like, such a large corporation like CrowdStrike has really even managed to send code out like that. Maybe they found this one in a billion case that for some reason affected all these computers at the same time. But then comes the question, did they purposefully send out faulty code?
What do you elaborate? Are you cooking here?
All I'm saying is,
they patched it the same day.
Yeah, they patched it the same day, but like,
what do you think, they were trying to keep me in the U.S.?
I don't know, because like, how does a bug not show up in testing, but affect so many computers in so many different cases, right? Like, it's either it's a rare case, so it affects a few rare cases of computers around the world, yeah. Or it's a prevalent case, and that's what causes such a widespread outage. But if you're a large company like CrowdStrike, whose whole product is corporate level software that hundreds of thousands of people like depend on for their security, you'd assume they have the security and the rigor in their testing to ensure that bugs like this don't affect so many people, right? Yet, for some reason, this update went out and affected everything that was using the software. So I feel like there was a bit of negligence in that.
I completely agree with everything you said there, except for when you said, I think you said like hundreds of thousands of people. I'm going to up that hundreds of millions of people. This
even
is very
worse.
Clearly extremely critical software, which I think I agree with you. There was some form of negligence. Whether that their testing procedures were inadequate at catching these types of bugs. Like, me personally, you could make the argument that, okay, like, automated testing maybe doesn't catch bugs that would occur at the kernel level. Sure. I could spin up code that I wrote on, like, a local machine and just watch it fail if I wanted to, you know, ensure that any computer that was running my code would work. Because it's not, you're absolutely right, it's not that this was some edge case. Okay, sorry, I should phrase
maybe
that
it
carefully.
Was an edge case.
That's what I'm saying. It could have been an edge case. However, it was a common enough edge case such that
affected, yeah.
every computer encountered it. So there's absolutely some level of negligence, whether that be through inadequate testing, inadequate code review. I want to talk a little bit about the code review aspect here, because I've worked a few co-op jobs I've worked in software development. Not a single one has had, like, no form of review. It's always you write the code in a separate environment, and then when you go to put it into the production branch, there's always some type of conversation, justification, meaning whether it's a boss or a supervisor. So I'd be really interested to know more about CrowdStrike's internal structure. What does their code review look like? I'm sure that the investigation will come from this. I have no doubt that there's a lot of angry people at Microsoft that are going to want to know answers about how this was able to happen. I'd be really interested in the findings of this investigation that's no doubt going on. Where was the problem? We know the problem in the code, but such a problem like that, I would argue, should have been caught, especially in such critical software.
Before we move on, just a...
So you mentioned that you perhaps think that it might have been on purpose.
Yeah. I'm not letting you go.
I can elaborate on that if you'd like.
Yeah, let's not discredit it, but let's like what would Microsoft's or CrowdStrike's reasons for it to be on Burbs be?
One, okay. I have a couple conspiracies. Some not so severe, very severe. One is someone really wanted an easy way to make money. So what they did is they bribed some high-level exec or some leader on the engineering teams to allow this bug to go through so that they can put a short order. They can put shorts on the CrowdStrike stock, right? And as we saw, the stock went down 11% that day. Like, I went on the stock. I was like, oh, what's the stock at? This is probably went like down a lot that one day. And lo and behold, the stock went down 11% that day when I checked. And so all I'm saying is someone could have paid a bit of money to force this poor code to release and force the company's reputation to be tarnished and cause this down so that they can make money off of that decline.
You're absolutely correct that could have happened. However, what that is it's called insider trading, which is extremely illegal.
Highly illegal.
But it happens.
So I'd have to imagine
But it happens,
in such, I'd have to imagine the person even attempting this, they'd have to be, you know, smart in the sense that, okay, what I'm about to do is going to make me, I don't know, a couple million bucks short in the stock, let's say, if I'm putting my life savings on it. Mm-hmm. There's going to be an investigation because I'm blowing up the world.
Exactly.
I am grounding every flight in America. I am shutting down every hospital in the country. I am not going to get away with this, is my first.
Yeah, that's
thought.
What I'm saying. So, this one is a bit more far-fetched. But I think
I agree with that.
It's very far-fetched, but it is a possibility. The more likely conspiracy I have is that there's a lazy engineer in there who's like, damn, this one test case isn't working. I'm just going to ignore it for this one situation, and I'll push the code, and I'll hope my senior dev just kind of reads over it because he's also lazy. We're all busy, and then they just made this code go through. I think that's the more likely case.
I wouldn't even call that a conspiracy. I think that's a genuine possibility.
Yeah.
I think that this really did highlight a failure in the review processes of CloudStrike.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, yeah, those of you at home, keep your eyes on the news, throw the eventual report that gets released, throw it into ChatGPT, have it summarize the main points for you, because I think it's really interesting. I think we're going to learn what caused this incident, but what I hope comes from it eventually is how do we prevent things like this happening again? Because I swear to God, like I caught my flight out of the States by literally 30 minutes. Lucky. Literally, I got delayed. I got delayed in Georgia, transfer in LaGuardia, got delayed 30 minutes. Only reason I was able to make it on that plane was weather. And therefore, had I missed that plane, I wouldn't have been able to get home until Friday, maybe even Saturday, with the way Delta is. No disrespect to Delta Airlines, but also, I guess a little disrespect. You can watch the John Mulaney bit if you need any more elaboration. I think I've used my time. No, I had another extra thing, but I can just save that for another episode. I think I feel
we
good.
We can't save that for another episode. We can
time,
do a whole CrowdStrike episode.
We could do a whole CrowdStrike. When that report comes out, I might consider it. I'm going to do a bit more.
Research.
100%. Like it's a crazy topic. Very crazy.
There are a lot of. There's a couple other things I did want to raise, but I was making a fair point. I think we should be moving on.
All right. Who's up next? Fletcher or Sujesh?
Fletcher, you can go. Your topics are a bit more serious than.
I think if ours are more serious, then yeah, you should sandwich your Mexicans and their DBZ.
All right.
I was saying before this, before we started filming this episode, I was asking if we needed a script or anything, and Fletcher said, "Nah, we'll wing it."
I think we're doing quite a great job, and I think we can only get better.
I mean, we're only through one topic, and I think I did the most prep, so let's see what's going on in Mexico, eh, Matt?
All right. Okay. So I don't have exact dates for this one, but like early 2000s, mid-2000s, what happened is it was the Mexican government saw that it was more expensive to broadcast
other cartoons, like from the States, its own shows, and things like that, right? It was just very expensive for them to provide child entertainment through North American resources. But what happens is they found out that the license to broadcast Dragon Ball Z on the Mexican networks was the cheapest option. So what ends up happening is that the children's shows on the Mexican TV networks were all Dragon Ball Z. As a result, an entire generation of Mexicans, and they probably still have that. Yeah, no, an entire generation of Mexicans grew up on Dragon Ball Z. And as a result of this immense popularity, what we see, one, Dragon Ball Z is still a staple for Mexicans, all right? And two, it has made such an impact on their culture and just their way of life that you'll see images of Goku at like vendors, you'll see images of Goku in bars, you'll see some stupid posts online of Goku being in some people's altars next to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, right? So like Goku and Dragon Ball Z just made such an immense impact on the way of life and like the childhood memories of like current like Mexicans that are like 20 plus years old, right? And as a result of this impact, people have also come up with theories and hypothesized that whenever a new Dragon Ball episode drops, the Mexican cartel's crime activity also goes down. And just to me, like, this might sound like a lot of blabbering, but like to me, it's just this serious impact that one show has on a generation's childhood has such long-lasting impact as they grow up and into future generations. And I just find it really interesting that this is not just like a Mexico-only thing. You'll find it across cultures and across countries in the world. Another thing that, like, another place like India for me, right? Is growing up, the childhood show was Doraemon. Once again, I don't know why Doraemon is so popular, but Doraemon is a Japanese manga and anime series that for some reason has made its way into the Indian children's core, like, roster, I guess, of shows and core list of interests. And it's found its way once again into the Indian market as like they sell products, and it's just such a core part of the culture that it can't leave right now. And I just like to ask, like, if you guys have had any similar experiences or seen any similar things in your lives or from people you've heard talk to.
Well, what you said was, it's very interesting, but really all I heard was the answer of war on drugs is Goku.
There has to be a sting operation.
It's me, Goku.
It's
definitely interesting. I was doing some, I hope you can understand, so Josh, while you were talking there, I was doing some additional research, you know, just corroborating citations, and it seems you're right. I found multiple articles kind of saying exactly what you were saying. With respect to, I think the whole cartel violence going down thing might have been a joke. I think you're correct. I can see the evidence now for the Mexico, Latin American areas of the world being completely taken with Dragon Ball Z, which I think is great. I saw this in the news a while ago, but you might have to correct me. I think the show creator passed away.
Yep.
I think in the past few months, yeah, and I remember seeing, like, even in my circles, which I'm pretty asynchronous with the whole Dragon Ball sphere, but outpourings of, you know, support and love for the creator even made it to me, which I think really speaks to, you know, how widespread the appreciation for his work was. That was great to see. And in terms of trying to think things I've seen myself that kind of go hand in hand with that, like my head goes to like Nintendo properties. That's I guess the closest thing to me in my little corner of Canada was. Mm-hmm. characters like that, Nintendo characters that really have folks rally behind online. But I'm failing to think of like an actual phenomenon that, other than something like Pokemon, I guess. But again, like, I think Pokemon is, I don't even know enough about Pokemon to ramble on, but I'm just thinking a general phenomena. Mm-hmm. Fletcher, you got anything?
No, like personally, I don't have anything similar, but something that does, that makes me think about something is, do you think that it's harmful? Because like, there's the similar way about one culture's media being presented to others. Obviously, the biggest one is Hollywood and all those movies being presented to other countries. And do you think it's problematic for kids from, let's say, third world countries to see all of the important, the big movie stars only happens in America, so they idolize that sort of life?
I think that's a really interesting point.
Is that harmful? Well, obviously, what are your thoughts about it?
Yes, and I think it's clear like that it's harmful. However, I'm not exactly, I wouldn't call myself qualified to dictate exactly why it's harmful. I'd only be able to recognize the fact that it's mainly a cultural thing. Like kids in these countries, if they're seeing American ideals being perpetrated as the good guys and XYZ, like oftentimes movies select another ethnic group to represent the bad guys.
Yeah,
I think that introduces, like, I'm thinking of children here, that introduces a lot of self-worth discussions, that introduces a lot of even like people being proud of who they are, where they're from. I think that's mainly where you see a lot of that harm. And even in I think you risk losing cultural expression just because, like, there are parts of the world where media is too expensive to create, so they rely on outside sources. And that risks, over time, if you're only consuming media from Western sources as you're growing up, there's a chance that as you grow up, you're going to start maybe losing touch with your local community and being more like-minded akin to that of those Western media sources you consumed. I threw out so many buzzwords there, but I think I stuck the landing. I think I got out what I was trying to say.
Like your plane.
Yes. Oh my God. By the skin of my teeth.
All right. I'd like to add on to that. So as you made a good point, like, because say it's just cheaper and easier to consume or like buy the licensing rights to spread like American media, I think as a result, because it's the center and it's really all that you see growing up, I agree, it's like you tend to kind of lose out on your own local cultures, but it also has an unwanted effect of idolizing or just really making that one field, that one country's or just locations, cultures, values, and locations the most important in your mind. Like, in the sense, like, the American dream is such a marketed thing around the world. And part of that is because the American culture is just so well marketed, so well sold around the world that it's seen as the goal. And what happens is a lot of people end up abandoning their own businesses, they abandon their own communities in pursuit of that dream. There's a lot of examples. Like, for once, of course, there's like the American dream and how thousands of people, hundreds, millions of people tried to immigrate into America so that they have that one fighting chance to earn their millions, to make their legacy, to build that generational wealth. Another thing, as we're seeing very recently, is that immigration to Canada is following a similar pattern, and the Canadian government is just letting in so many immigrants because, once again, there's interest from those countries, let them in, and they're all just so interested in trying to achieve that financial wealth. But what they failed to realize is, one, they're abandoning an ease of life that they would have had in their own countries because that's where they grew up, those are the cultures they grew up with, there's just a community that they can better relate to, so they grow, they move to an alien environment, and two, it's the government's fault is for accepting so many
immigrants is not like it's bad in the sense that it tanks the economy so hard, in the sense of the job market becomes a lot more inflated, housing becomes expensive. We can see that today in Ontario, all across Ontario, housing has become so much more expensive. Like in Waterloo, as we are Waterloo students, if I weren't in the position that I am, I would be paying $1,000 a month to even get a reasonable living situation that's close to the campus, so I can properly study, so I can probably access the resources I need. And yeah, overall, just that spreading of one culture's media across the world makes people idolize that one piece of media over their own. And sometimes you even get cases of people choosing that media over homegrown media. Like a personal connection I have to that is, like, in India, a lot of people speak, like, you'll see in the workplace, people start speaking more English than they would speak Hindi, like one of the most common languages in the country. You'll see, like, teenagers trying to adopt Western food, Western culture, Western fashion, and abandoning practices from their own hometowns. And I think that's just incredibly harmful and almost an infestation, maybe a bit of a strong word, but like it takes over with the youth and really just propagates itself throughout the country.
I
think we could do probably, like, as you mentioned in there, like us being Waterloo students, and you were talking about the price of rent specifically for us in Ontario, I think we could probably do a whole episode on that housing issue, because I think we have the perspective. It was Conestoga College was, I think, headlining nationally. Do I have that right? Because it was one of the, I think it was one of the school, I guess I got to be careful here because I'm not read up on what was actually alleged by the government. But I do recall seeing Conestoga College mentioned in headlines as a place that was taking in a bunch of international students,
mm-hmm.
Without really thinking about the capacity of the local area. And that's led to, like, I can't even count how many headlines I've seen about six internet. This one with the recent Toronto floods, this is one I read that really stuck out to me. There was a basement that flooded, and part of why it made the news is because in that basement was living six international students all in, like, the same room. And it was six people.
Yeah.
Sleeping in a single basement that was flooded in the recent Toronto floods, which is another episode about Toronto's ability to keep up with climate change infrastructure. But yeah, Sujesh, I think you raised a lot of really interesting points there with how the how even that media perpetuation has led to the current housing crisis that we're facing here in Canada, at least in Ontario and Nova Scotia. Those are the only two provinces I've firsthand seen it, but the news will
always getting better in Vancouver as well.
News will tell you it's ever...
Yeah.
No, not
what do we think is the best, I guess, ideal solution? It obviously there's no easy one or else it would have been implemented. Like
I'm not educated enough.
None of us are communications or marketing majors, but like we can have thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. Like my I guess instinct would be to help fund foreign media, sort of like portray that more, maybe, as we mentioned. I think they're starting to be better at this, of not always having the Americans as the protagonists and the antagonists as other countries. I think the modern media is starting to get a little more cultural friendly with that. But
yeah,
I'm gonna hop in on that and even say, like, when you say like they are starting to get better at that, I think I like the idea of like monetary incentives, like programs that get offered to help other countries start up their own media empires. Because when we say like they are getting better at hearing from diverse voices, the they we're referring to is most like, it's Hollywood, you know, it's those type of big, already pre-established executives. And I think if over time we're able to make that they not just be them, have that they refer to, I guess, an eventual global media conglomerate comprised of Hollywood, some places in India. I think Bollywood's big there, but Like I'm talking completely out of my butt here because I don't know anything about international media. But like we've been talking here, giving the opportunity to other places in the world and helping them grow to that same notoriety that we have here in the West.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be good. Full stop.
That's good. Okay. Fletcher, do you have anything?
No, not really. I guess, like, ideally, yeah, every culture would have their own media. And so every culture would be portrayed. Oh, I want to watch a country about, I don't know, Zimbabwe. I get to watch a Zimbabwe film with that's equally as funded and well-produced as a regular Hollywood film. Yeah. Obviously, it's a little bit of a dystopia there, but...
I also think it comes down to the national governments to have a firm grip or just to be a bit more strict on it and to promote their own cultural values from that country instead of allowing international companies to really build their industry. Like, I understand having large companies, say like Google or Hollywood, just like set their roots in other countries really helps the country's economy. But in the long run, what you end up having is, as we see, is that that international companies' culture values end up spreading within that country. And really, I think it's also up to the governments to fund more local projects to really focus on their country first and sometimes take the hits for the long run to grow their own native producers, directors, and so that all countries kind of get that chance to really grow their own media industries.
Mm-hmm.
Something you said there, Sujesh, unrelated to current topic, but another future episode idea, where you were talking about companies going to other parts of the world, setting up industries and headquarters there and things like that. We need to do an episode about why FIFA is a terrible, terrible, evil company. Allegedly. I gotta protect my...
Allegedly.
No, but the community agrees that the president's just corrupt.
Not just the... Bro, we gotta talk about going... Like, because obviously what brings that to my mind is them going to these countries and building these giant stadiums, creating a whole bunch of jobs short term, and then World Cup ends, and then it does nothing for the community. It's just a big building that's expensive to run, all the electricity and stuff. That's another episode. So I'm saying that now, so when we listen back to this in post, we can make a note of it.
100%.
All right. Well.
Yeah, not that. I'm honest to God, Suresh, I don't think you intended that to evolve into what it evolved into.
No, I did want to talk about the cultural values and like the influence that media has, but I didn't know it'd go on this long.
See, I thought you had Goku Cartel Funny written down, but this...
Actually
sound pretty good.
No, I'm smarter than that. Okay, I'm not that dumb. I try.
So, I guess transition wise, let's see if we got the best for last, Fletch.
Final topic, best for last. All right, so yeah, so I just want to talk about the concept. Sorry, not concept as in it's fake, but just the idea of privilege. Because as we were talking
before... That was a good save right there.
Yeah. Hylas, you often identify yourself as someone very privileged, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, the classic straight white male...
Exactly. That's setup, I'll say. Very common thing that a lot of people would agree with. But if we look at privilege, for example, just the dictionary definition, a special right, advantage, or immunity granted or available only to a particular person or group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, straight white male is usually what people think as has the most privilege, right?
Yeah.
But you compare you compare that to someone, I'll just say myself, straight Asian guy
with a buzz cut
I would argue that I have an advantage over you when talking to other Asian people, just because my culture fits is usually will be more similar to theirs compared to yours to theirs. So in that way, I would be more privileged than you by dictionary definition.
That's fair. That's I can understand that for sure. So are you talking about when you say? Are you asking like what is? Okay,
he's talking about quite literally. He's talking about the nuances.
Nuances, yeah, exactly.
I'm getting the nuances. I'll let you finish. You're introducing your topic.
Still. Sure. Yeah. I guess when people are talking straight white male, sorry to keep using you as an example, but
no, you're good. Like,
they're thinking just like when it comes to jobs, when it comes to being people in power, leaders, and they're thinking sort of that common idea of successful. And I just wanted to talk about the different nuances of what it means to be privileged, and if you guys have any thoughts about that.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great discussion. I don't know how you thought we were going to fit it into 20 minutes. This is another entire episode, but we can definitely.
This is why it's a pilot. This is why it's a pilot.
We're down to pick up our forks here, start eating. You raised, when you were talking about the advantage you would have speaking with other folks of Asian descent, I think I'd agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would, I would then say to that, that I think the image and the, like the statement of straight white men, kind of falling at the top of that privilege pyramid. That's probably, I don't know, privilege pyramid. I'll roll with it. Mm-hmm. I think that that image comes from a westernized view of the world where we look at the things in society that are valued. You mm-hmm. look to government, you look to industry.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest you talk about like the general idea of success and power. I think oftentimes, and I don't even think that you can just
it's Google portrayed
it. Not even portrayed. It is.
It is. Yeah.
It's getting better, but it is. It's you see a lot of these, old, dare I say, old straight white men.
I think
you're absolutely right. Rich, true. I'm not rich.
Rich is a very important
where the
one.
Where the nuance comes in is it's very situational, like you said. However, it's those situations that perhaps have the most sway in our society is where you see the straight white male demographic, and that may then be what contributes to the blanket statement of us having the most privilege, maybe from that weighted idea of, okay, if you look in kind of all situations in most situations or in the most powerful situations, you're going to find that a straight white male has the most privilege. And what I mean by privilege is very layered and complex, but we know what I mean when I say privilege, I think.
Like in terms of power, authority, and
influence. Yeah, power, authority, even how I'm looked at in a job application, say.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff kind of comes together to then in these
actually
very powerful industries. Oh yeah.
Funny thing about that. No, please finish your sentence. I'll just add on a little.
Oh, for sure. Like I was just saying, like, I think I was going to finish my thought by saying what I said a minute and a half ago. It's these significant and powerful industries is where you see old straight, rich white men with the power and with the power and with the privilege. And so that's, I'd argue where that comes from. But I don't disagree that in some situations, like you said, Fletcher, you would have more privilege than me.
Yeah, it's about context.
Your question. Yeah, about context. And if you're looking at like the broad scope, and even as you narrow your scope, you're going to find different folks with different amounts of privilege.
Mm-hmm. You know, funny thing that you mentioned, like in those, like when you're talking about those fields of industry, politics, just those corporations, and you also mentioned how things are getting better. It's funny because now we're seeing that one like with recent events, one possible president candidate in the United States is a non-white old male. And then I think it's just
sorry, I thought you were gonna say. I think you mean Kamala Harris, is that correct?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, sorry, I didn't expect you to describe Kamala Harris as a non-white old male.
He's completely correct, though.
It's like it's antithesis. It's the opposite of what like this whole topic we're going on. The point I'm trying to make is I think you're making a great point of how things are progressing, and this can be a whole topic on how like capitalism might not be that bad, especially if you get a chance to get to the top. That's a very hot take.
I mean that's the thing with capitalism. It's not so bad once you get to the top. But yeah, that's all.
Usually that's how it works.
Episode. I think that is in fact the problem, people would say, but yeah, that's a whole episode there too.
All I'm saying is that things are getting better, and I feel like we've gotten to a point where we've villainized these, like, not villainized, but we've perpetuated it so much that we can't imagine things are getting better. And I think that's another nuance of privilege is, yeah, these people have had privileged lives and that they do have advantages, but I feel like we often also forget that that sort of influence is waning and it is quite quickly becoming non-present, and we forget to look at the good in that, I think, in many discussions we make.
I want to come out not to disagree or discredit, but I do think it kind of does a disservice to say that power structure is kind of waning, because while it is true that as you said we have a non-white old man, Kamala Harris, as a president-elect in the United States, I think it was confirmed today. No.
Well, no, it's not confirmed. It's Biden gave a strong recommendation.
The Democrats
haven't had a proper.
They don't have their convention to nominate, right? Where I was going with that, she was only endorsed by Biden, who is a straight old rich white man, in his stepping down, allowing for her to take center stage, and he didn't even want to step down until this weekend with his contracting COVID-19. And all these other factors. So it kind of ended up being the perfect storm to put her there. And even outside of that very specific political example, there is still bias in job application by job interviewers. Straight white men just tend
to... That's the thing I wanted to add.
I read a stat like male and female interviewers tend to pick the straight white male with the same resume. It's just you swap the name, right? You have John Doe and Jane Doe. They tend to pick John Doe just through societal prejudices. So when I say it's getting better, it's because it is, you know, there are people fighting, doing very important work through all aspects of society to slowly, and it is very slow, but get us to a point where this power structure is now being questioned, I think, all over. It's being questioned, being looked at. So many EDI groups have popped up. Like, I'm on a school student design team. We have a EDI group that's very important to our team structure. Various political groups, student societies, they're all really examining how they represent themselves. Are they being equitable and inclusive to everyone? And things like that. I think that's great. And it's really been amazing and inspiring to see that. But there is still core pillars, I want to say, politically, big picture wise, that are still yet to be knocked over before I think we could claim that anything is waning. I think it's still, unfortunately, very much in effect, but it is looking good to see so many eyes on it in society today.
One thing I want to add, though, is that, as you mentioned, this power structure is waning, but that makes how we view Kamala Harris as just the non-white straight male that she is.
Yeah, agreed.
I think that's a problem, is that a lot of people just see her as a person that might become president who's not a straight white male, and I don't think that's fair. She's definitely way more than that. She has her own ideas, her promises. I'm not educating that in any way, shape, or form, but it's, I feel like, due to the fact that she doesn't fall under that people, so many people either support her solely for that reason, some people don't support her solely for that reason, and a lot of people just see that as who she is, and I feel like that's also not exactly correct.
Yeah, completely agree. Especially in the States, with the political polarization that you see down there. I think you're absolutely right. There's people that they're going to take a single look at her to decide who they vote for, which is really unfortunate, and I think speaks to how much work there is left yet to do. But like I do agree, like I do agree that things are getting better, and I think that they are on track to continue to get better. Although I don't want to get too political here, but I think you guys know what I mean by they are on track and have the potential to remain on track, is what I'll say. Probably, if you're picking up what I'm putting down.
Yeah, that's fair.
Fun tidbit I want to add on the end of that. So when you mentioned the whole like there's a bias in hiring. So a big part of job applications that I think we're all familiar with is the ATS, like the automatic tracking system or whatever, like where
Are you talking like the
resumes.
parsing keyword?
Yes,
Yeah,
exactly,
gotcha.
exactly. Like there's this like because they're large companies just don't have the time to read every single resume, what they do is they use automatic parsing to filter out purely based on text content and whatnot. Now there's this one content creator, his name's like Jerry something something something, but he has a whole company that
Now we gotta
does.
go cite this guy, man.
You can search it up. It exists. Like
Okay.
Very
he has
something
like
something something.
Wong Sulting or Wong Consulting or whatever. They do career consulting, and he did this one experiment with AI, like ChatGPT, Claude, and Gemini. And what he did is he took the exact same resume, but just changed the names to fit certain demographics. Like there's one Latin name, there's one Asian, East Asian name. There was just standard American, white American name, right? And what he found is that in each of these like AI models, preferred ended up ranking these resumes, even though they are the exact same, except for I think Gemini. And I just think like that's just a funny little, not funny, an interesting thing to see that even as you mentioned, like, yeah, we are getting better, but we can still see evidence of these biases, even in the AI that we are using today.
That is
Yeah,
funny.
that reminds me of do you guys know who Dr. Joy Buolamwini is? Buolamwini, sorry.
Not at
I don't know
all.
if I'm saying that right. You probably would know some of her work. She is the figurehead behind what's their group? I know she writes a bunch of books, but she founded the Algorithmic Justice League, which you. I'm going to keep talking until I jog your memory. I think she was a student, I think, at MIT, and part of her thesis work or coursework was facial recognition databases and technology. And part of what kind of came out of part of what her group, the Algorithmic Justice League, is about is ensuring that technology is equitable, is developed equitably, considering people from all backgrounds. And that was founded out of the facial recognition technology being super good at identifying like white people with whiter skin, whereas it couldn't identify her until she put on a white mask, and the white mask was instantly identified. So that's I think one specific area that we can talk about as people who work in technology, as an area where there's work to be done. And I think Dr. Joy or Dr. Buolamwini does really amazing work. Those of you listening at home, you can go read her books. I got to see her speak a few times live, and it was really cool. And I think she's really cool. And she followed me back on LinkedIn when I reached out. So that's my little flash.
Unfortunately, I've never heard of Dr. Joy,
Suggest
but
you've
I've
seen
definitely
her
heard of that work.
in first year in
I did?
arts in the arts yeah in arts
I didn't pay attention in the class, you know
190.
that.
I know you didn't pay attention, but we there was a whole class where we examined her some of her a few pieces of her writing and a few one of her I think it was her TED talk we took a look at.
Oh.
Yeah,
Interesting.
but that's on brand for you not to remember that, don't worry.
Oh, I don't remember many things. Just don't word
Oh,
this
sorry. Yeah,
incorrectly.
I'm not trying to throw you under the bus there. He doesn't remember
What
many
was an
things
actual?
or any of that class. Yeah, what's your recommendation report about, Sujesh?
Oh, I actually wrote my recommendation report on the biases of algorithms in distributing ads and job postings to men and women and the disparity in that.
Fascinating. Funnily enough, so that's more or less right in line, I think, with her work. So.
Yeah, I wrote mine.
Interesting
on
how you're. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember my work I did in that class. So
I'm gonna look at that paper, and you're gonna have cited her like three times.
I probably did. I cited multiple papers on that. The biggest thing that I covered in that paper was how like social media platforms like LinkedIn or Instagram or even Facebook actually spread job postings at a different, especially STEM job postings at different rates to men and women, and especially more to men than less to women. I just think, yeah, like the work, I've definitely heard of her work, but I've never. Don't remember her name ever.
Yeah, no problem. Like, from what I gather from her speeches and that, she's pretty cool. So I don't think she'll take any personal issue with that. But I definitely recommend, you know, reading up on her and her work.
Another thing on the facial detection and like skin tones. I think grade 5 or 6, we're talking about. Just like the impacts of tech and AI in the world. And one of the topics was how soap dispensers don't detect darker skin tones as easily as lighter skin tones.
Yeah, yeah. That's exact same issue, right? It's tested on people with light skin. It's not caught, obviously, or sorry, not obviously. However, the issue is that they don't think to test with darker skin tones. Mm. Then those products are circulated internationally and you have inherent racial bias baked into your code and your product.
Mm-hmm.
Also, sorry, when you said we were in the fifth grade talking about like the state of tech, I got like Jaden Smith vibes from that. Don't want to talk with the political and economic.
Okay, maybe not fifth, but right very likely sixth grade, because my teacher was like, he gave off those Jaden Smith type vibes.
I think we're making fun of the wrong thing here. It made me think of the Jaden Smith thing, but I think your take and your thoughts are very well founded there, as opposed to Jaden Smith, who I think was just saying that to be, I don't know what he was trying.
Relatable.
To be really, because he was really funny.
The child of a millionaire.
No, it was so relatable, man. I'm trying to think about the political and economic state of the world every day of my life.
That Will and Jada love.
R.I.P. Yeah, I think
nuances.
All nuances.
That was the thing.
Did you even get the turn to speak on that? I think we kind of.
No, not really.
I'll let you take the floor.
I think we had some great discussion.
You can feel free to take the floor. I think we've still got time.
Yeah. I mean, it's really up to Fletcher because he has to actually wake up early.
No, I'm good.
Anyways, another thing I did want to talk about is how, like Fletcher mentioned, how like he has more advantages, he has more privilege within the East, or at least the Chinese community. I would think that's just pretty prevalent amongst a lot of immigrant communities in America and Canada, because they are the minority, and really the best way for them to find success is really to focus on, I don't know, people within their own culture and nationality. Otherwise, what happens is they lose out on their culture and nationality as a whole by immigrating to the country. And they're just put at a severe disadvantage if they don't, I guess, have biases against people from their own country.
So it just creates, you're saying, like a positive feedback loop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that's
op amp.
That's definitely something like you'll see.
Has its pluses and its minuses. Like, it has its pros and cons. The pros are like you are a community that really doesn't have any other chance than by being biased, and that way it gives a chance for everyone. Like, once something gets going, it gives a chance for everyone to really grow. But then it also makes these, I guess, exclusionary beliefs that, like, where these communities end up staying to themselves. And sometimes it gets really extreme. really stupid example is Crazy Rich Asians. Like the main character, I guess, she can't marry into a specific family because it's not necessarily because she's not Chinese, but she's not Singaporean Chinese, or like she didn't grow up with that same culture and at that same wealth, and as a result she was discriminated against the movie. And there's like the whole, of course you have the happy ending, but like that sort of like disparity exists in the sense that you didn't grow up with the same culture and you aren't, so you're excluded from the community that really is part of the culture, and then you miss out on the opportunities, you miss out on really interacting with those people on a more personal level.
That's fair. One word that you mentioned that I'd like write a petition to change, the word minority, especially where I live in Toronto, Canada.
Oh, you're right.
That word is referred to as a minority. I can confirm they are in the majority.
I am not a minority.
That's, I don't know. I really get
picked up. I'm not a minority in Brampton. I'm not a minority.
It's just,
I know I'm not a minority.
And minority also has like a slightly negative connotation, if I'm not mistaken.
I feel like the way when people think of minority, like
exactly.
The image of like, there's a negative image portrayed when that word is used, as if they're like a poor, struggling group that doesn't have any wealth or any success. And of course, there exist biases that cause people of those groups to experience that disparity at like an unfair level. But it also, I think, takes away and sets a negative image of that entire
group. And no one ever refers to like the people who aren't considered minorities as the majority, which is kind of funny, in my opinion.
That is interesting. Yeah, it kind of creates that dynamic, like minorities and the rest of us might be how the media would say that and how that they might feel.
I think it's just another, it's definitely another problem with the media, just creating like divisions between people just to get more clicks, get more views.
Ooh, another episode.
Another episode,
modern
right?
Media, modern media. And then another episode for just the impacts of social media and why brain rot will be the death of us all.
Oh, that's going to be my favorite one.
When Skibbity Toilet hits the nuclear launch button, don't say I didn't warn you.
It's coming. Are they going to like launch toilets across the planet with heads out of them?
No, it'll be nuclear warheads.
Ah, damn.
But it'll be done by someone who was raised on Skibbity Toilet.
Damn.
Yeah, so the president in 50 years is currently among us.
It's among us.
It's over.
Yeah, I think it's over.
It's over for us.
On that note, any other final thoughts? I don't think this went too bad.
Yeah. I guess if I may close off.
Yeah.
I'll take the reins.
Unless anyone has final thoughts before I do, so.
Go ahead.
No.
All right. For those of you who took the chance on us to listen to this, to our first podcast episode, thank you very, very much. Just like a reminder, all of these are just our personal thoughts and just opinions.
Nah, they're fact.
You know what? Screw it. Fletcher says
please direct
any complaints to Fletcher at. I'll dox him next episode if we do one.
Yeah.
Anyways,
we got to figure out what our take is on.
Yeah,
who we are.
These are our thoughts, and we are not bigoted folks, okay? So if there's anything disagree with, anything you disagree with, it was not that anything that we said that you disagree with, it was not said with malintent. It was just something that we said off the top of our head, as this was meant to be an open discussion. And as such, we are always welcome to you reaching out to us to further discuss these topics, or if you have any concerns, or if there are any other points you'd like to raise, we'd love to talk to you about that. Hopefully we make this a regular thing. All of us have busy schedules, but hopefully this gives us a reset and maybe keeps us together mentally and
keeping forward. It was fun flexing the mental muscles, having a good long form discussion. I think this was good.
Yeah.
Also,
maybe we make this a bi-weekly thing. Maybe we make this a once in a year thing.
Yeah, I love your optimism. Top 10 least bigoted things to say. Number one, we are not bigoted.
We're not bigoted, folks.
We are, in fact, smalleted.
Yeah. Nothing we say is with malintent.
Absolutely. Mean no harm. Live, laugh, love. All people deserve to feel safe and respected on this beautiful planet we call home.
Not everyone.
And if anything, remember Goku on top.
Goku on top. The answer to war and drugs is Goku.
Signing off.
Bye-bye.